Welcome to Unsigned Hype episode 24. On this episode, I have the pleasure to talk to the incredible artist JR Specs from Maine. Prior to your interview, I asked JR which song he would play for someone that wasn't familiar with his music yet. JR chose his new single, Good Conversation, featuring Malik Elijah. Here's a snippet of that song before we jump into the interview.
Disrespectful conversations, that is when I tune you out. Knows you on his attitude, that auto-tune won't save you now. Growing up, I wasn't the bravest child. Aggressive and young and that still mess with me now. Facing regular confrontation, that wasn't my style. But regular confrontation through the days we facing now. Don't talk to me about facing fears. Been facing all that shit for years. Don't talk to me about facing fears. I hustled up that courage, wiped away my tears.
This is Unsigned Hype. The song you just heard is called Good Conversation by JR Specs, who's joining me from New York today. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome you to the show. JR, why is Good Conversation the song you would play for someone that has never heard your music before?
I think it's a couple of reasons. Number one is Good Conversation is the next thing I'm putting out. So I want people to be kind of up to date because I feel like my sound changes every time I put something out. But the other piece of it too is I think it gives a pretty good 360 view of like, I like a lot of different things, and you hear in that song like the vulnerable writing and the lyricism, and you hear some of like the more musical things that I might be doing with like rapping behind the beat and stuff like that, but you also hear some things that are current with like auto-tune and there's trap drums, you know, so it's a nice like mixture of different influences is what I would say.
Is that something that you actively try to do with every new song that you approach, is to always do something different and kind of challenge yourself? Or does that just kind of happen spontaneously, let's say? Or is that a planned move kind of to try new things out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a mixture. It's taken me years and years to kind of like develop my creative process and philosophy. That part of it almost like, in my opinion, can be harder than actually making songs, is like kind of mastering the psychology of your process. And the place I've landed at in the last couple of years is, I think the most important aspect is separating. When you create, it's really good to be like open and random. So I wouldn't say that I create with the intent to do X, Y, or Z. Like, I don't open up Logic and say, I'm going to make something that's different than what I made last time, or like that mixes a bunch of vibes together. You know, I try to go into a new session with like no expectations at all, as much as I can. But then when it's time to refine the records and select which ones you want to release to the world as like, hey, here's my best work, that's when I try to make sure like, don't drop the same song twice. Try to mix in little elements that it, you know, like Chain Link, the song I just put out, the first version of it was like very pop leaning. Like the bass line was different. It felt almost more like a pop punk song. And I wanted it to fit with these other records that are more like hip hop R&B influenced. So we ripped out the bass line, put in a different bass line that was funkier, and we added some scratching so that it had like a hip hop element to it, just to keep it like a little more eclectic. I think that's the stuff you do on the cutting room floor. But when you're creating, just create. If you want, like the last couple of days, I made like a joint that sounded like a Walmart version of Yeet. And then last night I did some shit that sounded like Lil Uzi Vert a little bit. And I probably won't put those out, but I think you have to just make whatever you feel like making to make sure like the faucet is on, so to speak.
And you know, when you were just a few seconds ago, you were mentioning this idea of putting great songs out and always wanting to put great songs out. And I'm wondering what how does that work for you? What's the, when do you know? And this is obviously very abstract, you know, but when do you feel like a song is great? You were just mentioning Chain Link, which is your current single that is out. What was it about that song in particular that made you be like, this needs to get out now the way that it is, and it's perfect to me? And I think the world will, you know, resonate with it.
I think the biggest thing when it comes to deciding whether a song is great, the rubric that I try to grade myself on is timelessness. Like, I think somebody will there will always be somebody that has something trendier or like hotter in the moment. So I try not to concern myself with that. And I try to just make songs and listen to them constantly. Like I'll pull up my own songs like more than Spotify a lot of the time, just to listen to the things I'm making over and over and over. And I call it stress testing them. Like, obviously you want to listen to your own music because it's fun, but at a certain point too, like I want to find out if I listen to this song 200 times, am I like, turn this shit off, I hate it? Or am I like, I'm tired of this, but I still feel it's like the representation of like who I am at my center, you know? Mm-hmm. And this next album I'm about to put out, like that was kind of the standard that I set for myself, was like Chainlink was one where I listened to it 200 times and I was like, oh, it doesn't quite fit with the other songs, but I love it. And I think it's like a good, you know, they say don't judge a book by its cover. I'm like, I want the cover to represent what's inside the book. So like the first song we put out, I want it to be super me. And I was like, all right, this is a fair representation. So that was why it was the one I selected to like spruce up and put out. I'm always just like, everything you make, not everything, but most things you make, when you make them, you'll be like, this is dope. But it's whether it loses steam for you after hearing it 5, 10, or 100 times or 1,000 times. You know what I mean?
We're obviously going to get into your story a little bit, you know, deep dive a little bit more into the early beginnings of JR Specs. But I would like to stick with this one point because I think it's really interesting. I know that in the process of creating your new album, you've obviously had to scrap entire songs. And, you know, I think on Instagram, you mentioned this idea of, you know, this pressure of wanting to put out great music, especially with this new body of work that you've been working on. Mm-hmm. When you scrap whole songs, can you give a concrete example of what made you scrap a song that you've been working on tirelessly for a longer period of time and then decided to just not do anything with it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think at the end of the day, like my process is more so when I sit down to make a song the first time, I'll try to make at least half of a song just so I know that there's most of an idea there. It's pretty rare that I get like really deep into making a song like closer to the finish line and decide to pull it off of the record. I think I did that. There was one song called October where I made the beat, I made a hook that I liked, I arranged it a little bit, I had laid a verse down, I had that much, and then I finally decided like this doesn't fit. And those are really frustrating, of course, because you've logged a bunch of hours and you're like, I'm not using this thing. But so, it just gets to a point where it's like, if you feel like you're forcing it, then you are forcing it. You know what I mean? Like things should be coming naturally to you. And the other part of it that I try to, the same way I was saying, wear two different hats, like create freely and then choose carefully at the end. I think there's another aspect that I've learned where I call it like, make sure you make granular assessments. Like if you have a song that you really like and you're like, something about it's not right, start paying closer attention. Like, what is the timestamp in the song where you're like, I don't really like this shit that much? Because sometimes you can figure out like, oh, it's this one bar I need to change, or it's just this one note that's messing me up, you know? And make sure you break out the magnifying glass and don't just, you got to do your research on the song before you throw out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah. With that being said, I would like to talk to you a little bit about how you would assess the evolution of your sound. So, really going back 10 years, what was the OK Saga? Was that like the first album or mixtape that you put out?
Yeah,
that was the first one, right?
Yeah, I was 14 when I made that record, and I think I put it out on my 15th birthday.
That's crazy. Okay.
And it wasn't very good, but it was out.
Yeah, take me back to that. What was that process like? Mm-hmm. What made you want to do music in the first place?
Yeah, so I mean, you have to go back even farther than that to get to like the genesis of it creatively, because that was just the first thing that I put out publicly. I was like a couple years into rapping at that point, like on my own time, because it was I think 7th, maybe 8th grade where I started putting down my first demos that were just like, rip a Kanye West instrumental from YouTube, lay a shitty vocal over it with no mixing, and like send it on Gmail to like 5 of my friends. Like that was how I started.
Do you remember the instrumental?
It was the first one I ever did, I think, was Barry Bonds by Kanye West. It was the instrumental.
Great beat.
Oh, fantastic beat. That's Knott's record, I think. Crazy.
Is it Knott's? Is it Knott's record? Really? Wow.
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah, no. That shit is fire, man. Like, that song gets way too much hate as well. I feel like people sometimes are like, it sticks out like a sore thumb on that record, but I'm a big fan.
Yeah, Nas is also way too underrated. One of my favorite producers, actually.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Always posting crazy shit on Instagram, too.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I cut you off. So yeah, Barry Bonds, put that out and then send it to some friends via email and then getting a response, yep. I guess, right? I mean, they must be letting you know how they feel about you rapping.
Yeah, I remember, and I always tell people this now just because it cracks me up. Like I think the first thing that really planted the seed for me was just like, you're young and you're going through middle school stuff of like, nobody knows who they are at all when you're in middle school. So I feel like I was like, oh man, like I like this girl. She likes some other kid that's like some other type of kid. And I'm like, oh man, like what do I have to do to get her attention? It wasn't that explicit, but that was the type of vibe I was on. It's like, oh, I'm going to rap so I can be cooler. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But then you try it out and you end up just falling in love with the process. So I think that was how it started, was I was trying to impress people. And then I just found that it was something that kind of made me tick more so as I did it more and more. So yeah, I mean, it started with like just sending demos to my friends. And then I had an older cousin, Jimmy, that was a massive influence on me because he's like 5 years older than me, I think. And he was rapping at that time where like he was like college age and I was like early high school and I was producing a couple records for him. So I started to get into like real studios here and there as well. So that was kind of like how the formative period happened. And I looked up to him musically. I mean, I'm sure I wouldn't have started rapping if I didn't have that like role model perspective as well. And he had a mixtape in like 2015 where I produced a couple of the songs. So I was like a kid, I was like 15, 16, something like that, like pulling up to the studio with my iPad, like airdropping beats, whatever, to the engineer and just getting to see like a studio session like that for the first time was really cool. So that was a big part of it, is like it just started sending songs to my friends. And then I put out my like shitty little first mixtape and a couple of kids at school were like, this sucks. And a couple other kids at school were like, keep going. Mm. And then from there, you just get the chip on your shoulder and you never stop doing it, you know?
It can happen for a lot of people that they try things out and they experiment with music or with something else. And it's just kind of a hobby. But the decision to turn this into something that you want to make money off of is quite a big step. Mm-hmm. And also there's always this moment where you decide this for yourself. You're like, I want to do this for the rest of my life and I want to do this professionally. When was that moment for you?
Yeah. So, I mean, my outlook on it was always like, I wanted to do music full time, but I was never like 100% sure if I could make it happen, but I never stopped making music because it's just what I love to do. I think the first time that I was like, all right, I need to make this my job at some point was probably like a few years back. And I wouldn't say there was like an aha moment. Like there's just, it was more of like a gradual epiphany because it's just one of those things. Like I've been doing this now for, I don't know, 12 years and never stopped doing it. And the only reason I would want to make money off of it, it's not to get famous and it's not to be X, Y, and Z of a person ever. It's just because if this was my job, I'd have more time to do it. And it's what I love to do. So, you know, you want to spend your life doing the things you love doing. That's all it is, you know?
And when this feeling of like, being unsure comes up, what is the fear or like what's the concern? I mean, I understand obviously finances drives a lot of the things that we do, but what's this thing where you're like, you're not sure if this should be or will be a career for you?
It's a good question. It's a complicated question. I think there's a few things that play into it. One of them is like, I would say I'm a fairly risk averse person, to be honest. You know, like I don't think I'm the type of person that wants to do, you know, I'm going to play it safe in some aspects of my life. So it's tough to juxtapose that with like, I spend all my free time doing this thing and wanting to essentially carve out a career in a lane that's super oversaturated and it's becoming worse by the day because the barrier of entry now is like anybody can pick up a mic and you don't even need a mic. You can make a song on BandLab and have it on Spotify like the next day. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, and that's a good thing. Like it's good that everybody's able to make music because music is beautiful. But at the same time, it's like, I don't know, like you see me doing all this stuff with the puppets and stuff and trying to like grab hold of my biggest, craziest idea because I feel like that's all we can do now is try to be like, all right, well, if you're doing this and you're doing this and y'all are all good at rapping, I got to come up with something. I got to pull the wackiest idea I have and go with that so that I could try to stand out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to ask you. So in this oversaturated environment, how do you approach this strategically? I mean, you were just mentioning the puppet Deuce, which is part of also the video that you did for Chainlink. How do you stand out? Like, what is your strategy when it comes to doing something different from other artists?
I think we've always known this, that like music is not the only thing that makes up an artist. Like, there's always going to be an image on top of that that helps people recognize and categorize what they're listening to. I just think more so now than ever, because there's so many more artists like floating around, it's really important to like find what makes you different and lean into that as much as possible. I think for me, what makes me different from other artists is like, there's honestly probably people out there that love making music and just love music more than I do. What I'm obsessed with is like using my imagination, and music is kind of just the thing that I'm best at doing that with, if that makes sense. Like, I have the most hard skills when it comes to music and making songs, but the reason you see me putting up like animated cartoons for the songs and stuff is because what actually makes me tick is this universe that I've created, where like the album is this concept record. It's, I don't know if you've seen this, because I've only talked about it a little.
I have.
Okay, fire. The album is a concept record about, and this is the elevator pitch, it goes deeper than this, but it's a multiverse variant of Sesame Street that's for 20-something-year-old adults instead of like 5-year-old kids. And the like, to me, like that idea being so zany and tying in with hopefully the live shows that I'm going to do this year and all the videos with this dude, like it being a multi-layered immersive thing. Like, we're on social media, like almost like method acting, like he's a real talking guy. He has his own Instagram profile, like that boundary pushing idea stuff. Like, that's what I love, which is lucky for me, because now artists have to be as much about content as they do about music. And me finding ways to be creatively sparked in those channels that really matter for promotion, like, it is very important. And I feel bad for artists that just straight up don't have that and don't want to make content at all and can't find a way to keep it interesting for themselves. You know what I mean?
No, I love it. I mean, I've seen some videos. I think also Deuce being on the phone with you and talking about the album and how long it took you to write the record, actually, Chainlink. Obviously it must be based on a true story.
Yeah.
Did it take you very long to write that?
Yeah. So Chainlink, it was 2022. I was an entry level at the company that I work at now, and I was working a lot of late nights. I have this lofted bed so that I can have my studio set up at all times underneath it, so I can just sit down and record. It's ridiculous, but it gets the job done as far as me making as much music as possible. Back then, I did not have that. It was like all my studio stuff was shoved into a corner. I had to like plug things in every time, and it just wasn't good like feng shui for getting me to record. I'd be working late nights, logging off at like 7:30. And then like, I got to plug in all my shit and stuff myself into the corner to record. I was like having a hard time making music that I wanted to make, like on the level I wanted to make it. You know what I mean? And Chainlink was like, I made a beat, and all I laid down was the, I can tell you I'm living if I promise one thing. Like, just that hook. That was all I had. And I just walked around and around listening to that hook on the street for like an hour or two. And I was like, all right, we got something. From there, like, it took me a really long time to come up with a verse that I liked. I think that was like the fifth try of doing the verse, the one that's on the record. Because it's tough, man. When you have a hook that you really like, and then you listen to it a bunch, and you're like, damn, now it's usually better to get a rough draft of the verse down immediately if you can, but you don't always have the energy. Because you don't want to be overthinking it for too long. So it just got to the point where I had to accept, like, I'm going to redo this verse until I like it. And I just did it over and over and over. But when I finally got one that I was like, all right, this is pretty good, I was like punching the air. I was so excited, because it's just so much work sometimes to break through that wall, you know?
Yeah. What's the one element in the end that sells to you the quality of the entire song that you wrote, right? When is that moment there for you that you're like, after 5, 6, 7 tries, that you say, okay, that's it?
I would say when it comes to whether you like something or not, it's always just feeling, and then you try to use your brain to describe it, you know? So it was really just like, I recorded it and I was like, this is hitting here. But how I would describe it up here is like, I laid that verse down, and it's the one that's on the final version of the song. Like the Chainlink overall, like a big theme of it is moving to New York, and it's like, holy shit, things are moving faster here. Like the way life feels in New York, it just feels, because there's so much motion around you, like everything, time is moving faster than it is in Maine. You know, that's my perception. And the verse that I wrote that's on the released version of the record, the way that it's written, it almost feels like, you know, if you're like really drunk and you're like, it feels like a slideshow, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you see one thing and then you see the next thing. It feels like that, the way it's written, where it's like your ride just came, you froze your frame, they asked about you, you forgot your name. And then it's like jumping really quickly from image to image. The verse itself almost feels like it kind of like illustrates the way time is moving too fast. The other aspect of why I like that verse is like, sometimes you write a melody and try to force lyrics into it, or sometimes you have lyrics and you try to get it to work with the melody. But when you happen to come up with both at the same time and it just fits like a glove, it feels really natural. And there's some parts in that verse where it's just like, I said exactly what I wanted to say and it fit with the sound of the record exactly. And that's really rare. Like, especially towards the end of the verse, I'm like, my homies at Goldman Sachs, no time to miss a cul-de-sac, reminiscing like a quarterback. You don't even want to start with that. It like all rhymes perfectly and it's exactly like what I wanted to say, which is just rare. Yeah. You know what I mean? Stay still, where you at? Drop me off. Mother shit, internet, top, superstar. It's a lot of love if you look for. I can tell you how I'm living if you promise something.
Me, I'm burning both ends. The flame will catch me eventually. Fuck, shouldn't have been calling you back. Early Tony, I'm an artifact. Yeah, I'm on the tarmac. The flight that I needed is hard to catch. Yeah, homies at Goldman Sachs. No time to miss a cul-de-sac. Reminiscing like a quarterback. You don't even want to start with that.
This was JR Speck's song Chainlink featuring Ken Rose. And now back to the interview. Chainlink actually features Ken Rose, also a very, very dope artist. Earlier, you know, we heard in the intro your song with Malik Elijah. This idea of featuring an artist on your song, I guess you guys, I know you did some stuff with Dre Waves as well. I mean, you guys are well connected. There's a lot of great collaborative energy, but for you, like, what's a very rewarding aspect of collaborating with other artists on a song of yours?
Oh, totally. My favorite part of collaborating with somebody is like before all of the more controversial stuff in the last few years, like before all that, Kanye West was probably like my hero and biggest role model in music. And I think one of the biggest things with Kanye is that he would take a featured artist and he would either he would push them into like a context on a song that you wouldn't normally hear them in. So it's almost like, you know, like Uncut Gems is like, oh, Adam Sandler, but he's in a very serious role. And it's like the dissonance between like what you normally see that person doing and the role you have them in makes it that much more exciting than if it was a traditional like, dramatic actor in that role. I find that stuff really cool. So to take like, when I first made Chainlink, I had mostly heard Ken Rose on like, kind of like breezy, like alt trap type of, that's maybe not how to describe it, but like bouncy joints where he's like getting rap flows off. And Chainlink was roughly the same tempo, but it felt more like a pop record. But since it was at like his pace, like I knew he would sound great on it. So it was dope that he like connected with the record and hopped on. It was the same thing with Malik, where I was like, Jimmy, who I was telling you about, my older cousin, went to college with Malik, and he was like, Malik's got a crazy singing voice, man. Like, you got to get him to like croon on something. And hearing him do that, like, I haven't heard a lot of records out where he really bears his soul like this. So
yeah,
that's a big part of it, is I just like to hear people kind of go a little bit left of center of what they might normally do, and to facilitate that is really rewarding.
Yeah. And sometimes you hear these classic stories in the rap universe, is how rappers get a verse from another rapper and then sometimes ask them to redo them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's not something necessarily that I want to get into with my next question, but there might be creative differences, right? In the end, it's your song. Mm-hmm. You have a vision for the song. When there are creative differences between two artists, from your perspective, what are they usually about? Like, what do you talk about when you get a verse and something might not sound the way that you were envisioning it, let's say?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I'm trying to think. Like, it's been pretty rare that I've had a situation where I'm like, this isn't it to somebody I'm working with. Mm-hmm. Because I think as a not very confrontational person, I'm pretty careful to not like drum up collaborations with people I don't trust to knock it out of the park. You know? Makes sense. Like, I hate being in a situation where I have to ask somebody to do their verse again or not, or kill the record because... or tell them I'm not using the verse. I don't want to do any of that. So like, if I reach out to a Malik, a Kinrose, a Dre Waves, it's because those dudes are fucking assassins and they don't miss. You know what I mean?
Agreed.
Just in my opinion. So that makes it easy. I've never had to tell any of them to like go back to the drawing board. You know what
I mean? Yeah.
But when you do, I mean, I've had records where I had to ask somebody to do it again, and it's never like something personal, but I might be like, hey, like, could you try this? Or like, it just doesn't sound like you have quite as much energy. Could you maybe like take it up a notch or something like that? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and always just make it clear it's just about making the best song possible, you know?
Can you, you know, and you were alluding to this and a couple of questions ago about, you know, making great music and making a song the best song possible. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was really the reason that you've put this playlist together, but I know that you've had a playlist called Shamelessly Bad Rap Music at some point in your life.
Oh man. You're like Nardwar, dude. We have to know.
Yeah. What makes a rap song great and what makes a rap song bad? Is there a way for you to elaborate on that?
Yeah. So I think I will say too, like, I was probably like 14, 15 when I made that playlist. And I think when I was young, I had more of an element of like, thinking like some types of raps were better than other types of raps just based on style. Like, I might've been more like lyrical miracle shit is just better than shit that's like auto-tuned or like trap oriented. Mm-hmm. So whatever I had on that playlist, like, we could throw that shit out. Like, I feel like my taste has just changed so much, where like Young Thug is one of my favorite rappers of all time, and I'm sure when I made that playlist it would have been like Young Thug is garbage. What makes a rap song great? Again, it's one of those things you just feel it here and you can try to explain it here, but you'll never get the 100% perfect picture.
Yeah.
I think the number one thing that you can, the it's an imperfect metric, but the best one you can get for judging whether it's a good rap is quotability. Because if you're, whether you're singing or straight up rapping with no melody, like if I'm in the car and I'm singing the song back, or I'm like using it as an Instagram caption or just saying it, because I'm the type of person, like, I just walk around saying random shit to nobody in the crib while I'm doing, going about my day. If I'm like spouting the lyrics off, like the ability to remember it, like, that's a really good metric in my opinion. How much it sticks with you.
Something that I would like to go back to a little bit is, we haven't talked about it, but your mixtape Yellow. And I remember reading that mixtape was also representing this kind of like outlook for joy that you've lost as a musician.
Yeah.
I want to allude to these like times of, you know, emerging artists who go through these ups and downs, and maybe, yeah, ask you, how do you deal with that? These ups and downs as an independent artist?
Yeah. I mean, I'll say, I think it's an important distinction with Yellow that like music's a part of everything. So I'm sure I was having like a tough time finding joy in music, but that project is more so about like losing the joy of your childhood in general. Like it's mm-hmm. more so about like, you know, like to keep it totally a buck. Like I grew up pretty, like not, I didn't have like a sad or tough childhood. You know what I mean? Like I enjoyed mm-hmm. growing up, being in high school, had my fun times. And I think when that's your background and you get to 18, 19 and you start to have agency, you can get lost a little bit. Just like, oh shit, like I can really do whatever I want now and it's not laid out yeah. for me. You know what I mean? So I think Yellow was mostly about me coming to grips with that and trying to like realize like, hey, you're not, this is not summer camp. Like if you want to be happy, you got to get up and find it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think honestly, as far as like, how do you deal with the ups and downs? Night School, this new album, I've talked about it a little, but it's kind of like an unnamed like sequel to Yellow. It's really like the part two. And it's kind of where Yellow was me asking like, what does it take to be happy? Night School is like, there's no magic answer, but here's what I do know, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can do X, Y, and Z and you got to put in the work to be happy. That's really a big theme of it. You got to put in the work to be happy. It's not something you snap your fingers and you're just, you feel better tomorrow, you know?
Do you feel like you're there now?
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, like, you know, candidly, like work's been tough recently. So I've been a little more stressed out than usual, but like 2023, I had a great year and I would attribute that a lot to like just a shift in mindset from instead of wondering like, oh, why do I feel like this? It more so became being oriented to like, look at the checklist of things you know are always going to be a net positive, like working out, going to bed early, reading a book, like having good conversation with good people. You know what I mean? Like this stuff's all very intimately tied to the music, like figuring out that checklist of things that can help you. And like, how many of these am I doing? And if you're going 0 for 10 on the things that you know help, yeah, that's probably why you feel like shit, you know? And I recognize too that like there's some people that are like chronically chemically depressed, and those people like will probably need professional help. But for somebody like me that maybe I just need to be in really good habits to maintain a baseline level of like feeling pretty good. And that's kind of what the record is about, is committing to putting in that work, you know?
And is that your, I mean, obviously that's your next goal, is releasing that project, but what do you daydream about today? Like what's the next thing that you envision for yourself that you want to achieve as an independent artist?
I mean, a big part of it is I've done shows in a bunch of places up here in the Northeast. I'd like to keep going to new markets. I'd like to get to a point where like my name on the algorithmic side of things has enough weight that it can push to people where I could go do a show in Texas and people are there, you know, like that I don't want to be famous, but I would love to be able to go to any state in the United States and play like a room with 50 people. Mm-hmm. You know, like that would be fantastic. And I just don't, I'm not there yet, but that would be a point I would just love to get to. A big thing for me too, is like, I have always a running wish list of like people I want to work with in my notes app on my phone. I think for this next record, like every project that I've done, I feel like I've taken a step up in terms of like who I've been able to work with. Like I started out doing, you know, working off of local connections. And then on Yellow, like I had met my boy Suts through school. He's on the record. By 99 Daydream, like I had a joint with like Spose. I had a joint with Michael Christmas. Now on this Night School record, like you see, I've kind of transitioned more to like the people that I've met through the scene in New York. So like Waves, Kinrose, Malik, which I don't know that I might've just gave away the whole track list, but that's okay. but it's just like, continuing that evolution and like hoping to work with some of my like underground heroes the next go around, you know what I mean? Would be really nice. So those are kind of the things that keep me going, you know?
Okay. Finding you directions to Hamden, Maine.
Yeah. My home's in the woods. I give you all the feeling from my home if I could. I give you all the back roads, quiet neighborhoods, and all the late nights we were up to no good. We weren't up to shit. I give you every ball game we played in the dark. I give you every freestyle that came from the heart. I give you every sidewalk I ever set foot. I give you every meal that my granny ever cooked. I give you all the raps that I made before school. I give you all the jazz that I ever played too. I give you all the rides in the GMC and introduce you to the kids that believed in me. We got small town living with the widescreen dreams. I was young boy rapping, I was 19 me. I'm 20 and I'm ready, got any eyes on me. Throw confetti in that city where the rhymes made me, me. This that 202 flow, 202 boy. See you in that 044, what a do boy. I'm whipping down Western Ave through the nighttime. We kick back on the stars, we got like minds. They showing love, we don't really do the hate shit. Somebody told me I don't blow up and the game's rigged. I guess I needed to hear it cause now I feel sure. I wanna show my town to feel like a world tour. I went from humbling, stumbling through the evergreens to thinking I was a legend when I was 17, to really doubting myself when I was away from home, to knowing I ain't a hero but trying to make it so. Yeah. I want the small town living with the widescreen dreams.
This was Jaros Peck's song Home, and now back to the interview. You were referring to New York, you know, and you moved to New York, and you're originally from Maine. We talked about that shortly before we started the interview. It's like, I think 2.5-3 years you mentioned.
Roughly two and change, I think.
Yeah, that you've moved to New York. I'm wondering what the differences are in moving from a place like Maine to New York. Like, how do these places inspire you creatively to make music? Is there a difference mm-hmm. that you feel in making music in these two different places?
I mean, that's a nuanced question. I like it a lot. In New York, I think it's less about like the physical space sometimes, and it's more about the lifestyle that you live in that location. I think mm-hmm. in Maine, if you want to lock in and do something introspective or something really weird and not have outside stimulus kind of tainting your very singular vision for something creatively, you got peace and quiet in Maine. I can go hunker down in my folks' basement and nobody's going to bother me and I can just get my record done. In New York, I've kind of got like, you know, I'm going to work, I'm going to do X, I'm going out, I'm meeting a friend, I'm seeing 1,000 people as I get on and off the train. Like, it's just mentally different with more stimulus. But there's also more influences where like I'm going to more shows and seeing more acutely inspiring things artistically on a regular basis. So I would mm-hmm. say both have their pros and cons, and it's always, and the same thing with LA where we just went out to LA. Like that was like, I'm seeing like types of trees I never seen and shit. You know what I mean? Like it's something as concrete as that can inspire a song too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's interesting. I was wondering about that when I was researching your story a little bit, because Maine is obviously a very different place from New York. I have never been to Maine. I hear great things.
Yeah.
Must be beautiful.
Definitely.
When it comes to rollout, you know, a completely different question now, but you know, I know that you've had the Payday series, for example, which I thought was a very interesting concept of mm-hmm. releasing music. I think the idea was to release 2 songs a month, and like it was the first song was on the 1st, the second one like mid-month when people would get their paycheck. Mm-hmm. But also there's obviously, I mean, there's a lot of output that is demanded from you to keep up with these releases. From a strategic aspect, where do you think is the difference or the advantages and disadvantages from releasing single after single and Lucy's, let's say, versus to release an entire project at once?
I think in the modern era, the best thing you can possibly do is put out a series of songs and waterfall them. So like put mm-hmm. out one song and then another song with the original song as the second track, you know, and kind of like build an EP track by track. And that's how you get the most streams. Me personally, I'm just a project guy. It's like I was telling you, where what really makes me tick is like these big ideas and building universes, and I'm having so much fun building characters and things like that. So obviously that just lends itself more to like a bigger work that's more than the sum of its parts. You know what I mean? So I think at the end of the day, like I have to do what is exciting to me artistically, or there's no point in me trying to make this my life. Mm. So that's why I'm still doing a project, even though singles is maybe more advantageous. When it comes to the Payday thing, like that was really interesting because we didn't know that obviously had some pros and cons. Like, we put out a lot of music, but we were moving really fast. And there's some of those songs that we put out during Payday that I'm like, shit, like that was one of the greatest songs I ever wrote. And it didn't get any attention because it was like 9 of 15. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So just depends on how you pace it and everything.
And I mean, for Night School, you have a, I mean, you were mentioning this earlier, you know, this whole idea with Deuce, the puppets, the videos that you put out. What's the rollout strategy going to be like?
Yeah, I think I feel like I always tell my manager, Garrett, who shout out to Garrett, because we kind of like tag team all this stuff we're talking about with like organizing the releases and making sure we have enough video and meeting people to make the songs with. Like, Garrett's a photographer that's always giving like free photo sessions to some of these cats you see me like linking up with. And that's a lot of the times that's how we meet people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm always telling Garrett, like, we should try to do what's at the intersection of what's smart and what's artistically, like, what I love with this rollout, where I'm doing these animated videos where, like, the stop motion thing with Deuce, and we're telling a story and making it up as we go. That's really fun to me. And it also seems like, even though none of them have gone viral, it is really effective in getting people that follow me to invest in the rollout. Mm-hmm. They're like, holy shit, this is so different. Like, I get a lot of comments now that are like, this is really unique, and I just love to see it, and it's bringing fringe people in a little more. Yeah. So I think that whole aspect of building it, what's essentially like a sitcom almost in 30-second snippets, like, I'm going to continue to do that. I have some heinous, like, crazy ideas for where the story is going to go. Nice. So I would say we're going to stick with that through the album, maybe even after the album for a little bit, just to kind of flesh out the narrative.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, I mean, you're already dropping some great advice about, you know, that could inspire someone that might be thinking about starting a career in music to do it. What's the main advice, though, that you would share from your own experience with people who are just starting off, who are still, you know, considering to do this, you know, to make music mm-hmm. a part of their life and pursue this professionally?
I would just say enjoy it. You know what I mean? Because like I have this homie Xander, he raps and he's kind of in a similar spot to where I was at a few years ago. So I'm always trying to give him advice on like what to, how to like handle his process. And what I'm always telling him is just like, make sure you're enjoying the music you're making. Because at the end of the day, it's like I was saying, the only reason we're doing all this promoting and participating in this rat race is because you would hope to make what you love your job and the thing that you do every day. And the reason you do that is so you can enjoy yourself every day. So enjoy yourself today. You know, because then A, you've already won because you're having a good time. And B, your music's going to be better. If you're not having fun making your music, everyone's going to be able to tell. And I've definitely gotten wrapped up in that, like, oh, well, I need to have like a catchier hook so more people, it'll be palatable and everyone will dig this. And it's like, nah, once you break out the lab coat, you got the test tubes and you're trying to do all this extra shit, mm-mm. You got to just be having fun, you know?
And do you have some upcoming, I mean, you were just mentioning a friend of yours who's recently started making music. Do you have some unsigned hypes you believe deserve much more attention?
Oh, you should check out like everyone coming out of Orlando, Florida right now. You should check out Riley Shea, who I've got some shit with. Check out my homie A.O. Will. A.O. Will is, I don't know what they're putting in the water down there. Like, ridiculous. And then, like, those two are, like, they haven't put out a ton of music, those two. But if you want to also look at some other people in their community, they've got Jason Channel is this homie of ours that he's got this character that's part of his live show that wears a tube TV on his head. And when he was doing a show in Washington, D.C., he had me like sub in and be the guy with the TV on his head for his show. And seeing that he had a character in his live show is part of what inspired me to pull off this like puppet idea that I had. Also, like Flozig is this artist. I only met him for like a second one time, but he's from Orlando. And all his music is insane.
Yeah
you know Flozig?
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
Unmatched.
Amazing.
Like, and I saw him live in New York, and I'm like, I've started to get more and more jaded with just one vocalist singing or rapping over a backing track, like without a band. He was like, I like zoned out and forgot there wasn't a band behind him. I was like, this is insane. You know what I mean? So Orlando, Florida, just like everyone.
Thank you. Thanks for recommending those. I'll definitely check them out for sure. I'm getting to my final questions now. There's always a question I like to ask about what artists wish they would have known about the music industry prior to becoming a part of it. What would that be for you?
Oh my God. I still would say I'm only on the fringe of being in the industry, so to speak. So I don't know if I have like a huge like amount of insight on that, but I would say I'm in the game more than the industry. You know what I mean? I feel like there's a slight distinction there where I'm not like,
I totally see what you mean. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So I would say my advice though would be, when I was young, I think everybody, I have a song that got cut from the album where I said, like, every youth starts out trying to skip the line until they peep that nothing beats investing all of your time. And what I meant by that is, like, we all start out as 16-year-olds that are like tweeting, like, Metro Boomin, send me beats, I'm next up, you know, some dumb shit, like just trying to reach and trying to get hot immediately. And you don't realize, like, you haven't had a real job. You haven't been in real circles and networking when you're that young. So you don't realize, like, it's more important to be earnest, go meet people, participate in a community. And if you're a willing participant in a community, like, there, it may be that you receive some support back, but don't be going to people with your hands out, especially if it's not your homie. You know what I mean? Like, just be just pay it forward. You know what I mean? Just pay it forward. That would be my advice to people trying to get involved with community and get their foot in the game.
Yeah. And as a final question, you know, I mean, we've talked about, you know, your journey and, you know, the ups and the downs that come with building a career in music. What do you do this all for? What's the end goal for you? What's the reason for everything that you do in terms of music?
I feel like at the end of the day, like, I love this next album I'm putting out. Like, I think it's so good. I really, like, not in a conceited way, but just for me as the first listener, like, it is an album that if I don't listen to it for a few weeks and I come back to it and spin it, I'm like, man, this is like one of my favorite things I've ever heard. It like makes me emotional to even talk about. But that, I would say that the reason I do it is because I think that deep down inside me, if enough effort and time is invested, there's something that's like five times as good as that. That's like waiting to be like dug out like a fucking diamond 200 feet under the surface. You know what I mean? And I would say that I feel my purpose here is to like put in so much effort that I find that thing that's like in there, you know, and like leave it for everyone else.
JR, thank you so much for taking the time for this incredible conversation. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you, man. This was awesome. I had a great time. Girl, I'm 22. I don't have time for these games. Baby, it's my party. I'm gonna ball if I want. I'm gonna pull up, pop if I want. Like, pop, 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 pop. You gotta make your mind up, girl. This is not a damn highline. Young man trying to get the tennies like Popeyes. Hey, I'm going super, going cross-eyed. Baby girl, wanna keep me running like far-side when I give it up.
This was Unsigned Hype episode 24 with JR Specs. The track you're hearing right now is JR's song, Ball If I Want. Make sure to support JR Specs by checking out his music and following him on social media. And for your weekly Unsigned Hype, make sure to also follow us on Spotify and Instagram. All the links are in the show notes below. You can let my ass know if I'm acting a fool. I pulled up from the logo like it had to be you. I mean, would you like to take it back to the room and get your vibe? Shoot like a shooter, boy, I look like I'm Clay. Girl, I'm 22, I don't have time for these games. Party, I'm gonna ball if I want. I'm gonna pull up, pop if I want. Like, pop, 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 pop. Shoot like a shooter, boy. I look like I'm Clay. Girl, I'm 22. I don't have time for these games. Baby, it's my party. I'm gonna ball if I want. I'm gonna pull up, pop if I want. Like, pop, 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 pop. Baby, I'm just honest with you. I'm breaking silence for you. Can't be platonic with you. I'm caught off topics with you. When I just feel iconic with you. You bring ideas, tell me my fears. How could I stop it for you? But we don't need news and we broke like fools. If you say that's true, then we can't keep
we all turn out so sane. The green light's fake. You drove by stage and you said, but you really won't hit those brakes. Bring it back, that's okay. Whoa, whoa. You ain't gotta come stay while I lay. Whoa, whoa. God damn, I'm with the hot stars. And I'm whipping like I never seen a cop car. But the drinks on me if you're feeling it. So I got a time for you just a little bit. And if I'm wrong, you can do me like an idiot. But I ain't stressed. You know the dude bulletproof. When I got that fast, cause I'm shooting like a shooter. Boy, I look like I'm Clay.